ethics and chronic pain stigma in geriatric populations. That's the subject for today's Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, visit practicalbioethics.org. That's practicalbioethics.org. Daniel Goldberg is Assistant Professor, Department of Bioethics and Interdisciplinary Studies at East Carolina University, and he joins us now to talk about this issue. One thing that you brought up in your presentation today in Kansas City, talking about pain policy, pain management issues, was that the geriatric population tends to underreport its pain. Why is that?
Laurel, that's a tough question. There's actually a lot of possible answers to that. I think one of the factors is, in general, we have to understand that chronic pain tends to silence people in general. That's been well documented as part of its sort of phenomenological characteristics. It tends to alienate and isolate people from providers, unfortunately from caregivers and intimates, and even from themselves. We have pretty good documentation of that. So that is the general context. Why do geriatric populations seem to underreport even relative to others is an additional question we want to answer. And nobody's, I think, really sure. I think the answer, though, whatever it is, turns on the meaning of pain among these communities. In other words, to understand why these people seem to underreport pain at unusual rates, or at least higher rates than other kinds of populations, we'd want to know what pain means to them, the significance of it in their lives, with their families, in their communities, in their sort of social networks.
Isn't a part of this the fact that a lot of people consider that pain is a part of aging? Does that complicate the issue a little bit?
Yes. I mean, there's no question that it does. Pain and we have pretty good evidence among elderly populations that pain and aging are seen as proxies for each other. And so that, you know, sort of why would I report the fact that I'm aging? Why would I report the fact that I'm in pain? They're both seen as sort of fundamental parts of personal identity of the elderly. And this has been well reported by the elderly themselves. We're not just sort of attributing this to them. This is what they tell us when we ask them. So I think that has something to do with the underreporting. There's no question about it.
Then in their social groups, there are other aspects of that, like marking, deviance, and power, even within that kind of a group.
Right. Absolutely. And those are sort of some of the hallmarks of stigma, especially a disease stigma, is there are power dynamics that are going on. And so there's an in-group that marks the out-group. That's sort of the first criteria. And then the in-group marks the out-group as deviant. And that's sort of one of the harms of stigma, is that it's not just neutral. It always marks a group as deviant or as sort of inferior. And then there are power dynamics that are going on in it. In order for the in-group to mark the out-group, there has to be a power dynamic, a power structure going on. And that happens at multiple levels. But in particular, you know, disadvantaged and vulnerable groups are at higher risk of being stigmatized. We know that that happens. And that's true within elderly populations, right? So if you're a member of a vulnerable group, a subgroup within a geriatric population, you're probably at higher risk of being stigmatized than other members of an elderly population.
You talked previously about the meaning of pain within this particular group, and part of that is spiritual, isn't it?
Yes, there's no question about it. I mean, there's a lot of – unfortunately, when you look at what a complex multivalent phenomenon like pain means and you ask that, there's going to be a whole host of different factors that go into it. There's no question that, especially in the United States, where spiritualism and religion has been such an important part of the sort of social fabric historically and in contemporary times today, that it's going to be a huge part of what pain means to people is what is their sort of – not just their faith system, not just what they believe or what they don't, but what are the spiritual and religious messages in which they are socialized. So even if you're an atheist, you may internalize some of that kind of thing.
All of this around that chronic pain stigma, it increases the suffering, and then we have worse clinical outcomes that come about as a result of that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons that makes stigma an important public health problem is there's empirical and ethical harms. The empirical harms are, one, we've documented that disease stigma has a devastating psychosocial impact on people who suffer from this kind of stigma. It increases human suffering. It also seems to, even when we control for every conceivable confounder, we still find evidence that stigma is independently linked with worse health outcomes, and we can measure that in terms of morbidity and mortality. People actually have lower life expectancy when they're subjected to things like stigmatization and racism. Even if they have good education, good income levels, good access to health care, they still seem to die quicker. And so it's an enormous problem, but I also think that even where that's true, though, even if none of those things were true, I think we should probably still say that stigma is an ethical harm, and we probably shouldn't tolerate it, even if it didn't result in worse health outcomes.
So some of that comes down to what kind of society do we want to be?
Absolutely. I mean, that's sort of the framework that I like. I mean, I'm an Aristotelian at heart, and that's sort of the question, one of the fundamental questions that Aristotle said we have to ask of ourselves in a process of character formation. And it's not just an individual process. It's a process of collective character formation, social character formation, right? What kind of a society do we want to be? Because stigma is always social, right? It's always an in-group marking an out-group. It's always we who are stigmatizing or we who are being stigmatized. And so the question of what kind of a society do we want to be is, I think, the fundamental ethical question.
And I guess the question of how we move forward to address this issue has a lot of layers to it on how we address it.
Yeah, that's where it gets particularly complicated, right? I mean, one of my sort of frameworks as a ruthless pragmatist is how do we translate some of this highfalutin stuff into actual public policy? And there has to be a link to that. And I think that's critical. One of the fortunate things we know about disease stigma is that law and policy interventions seem to have an effect. And the most recent example of this is HIV/AIDS stigma. We know that HIV/AIDS and stigma is still a significant problem, and it's also distributed unequally, like most things regarding disease in general. But we also know that the levels of stigma and the intensity of the stigma is lower than it probably was a couple decades ago in the United States. And we also have very good evidence that even though there's a lot of reasons why it might be lower, one of the reasons is because we implemented law and policy measures that were expressly targeted at HIV/AIDS stigma, not accidental, not targeted at other things, but we might hope they would impact stigma. They were intentionally and very expressly designed to lower the burden and the intensity of stigma that was directed at vulnerable populations like gay men and Haitians and intravenous drug users. And so I think one of the things that is hopeful about chronic pain stigma is it gives us a lever for intervention. We can do things that will lessen the stigma. And in so doing so, I think we're closer to answering Aristotle's question.
Daniel Goldberg is Assistant Professor, Department of Bioethics and Interdisciplinary Studies at East Carolina University. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
My name is Laurel LeBou. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.